What can we learn about justice from the world of sports? This is one of the themes that animated the work of the late journalist Grant Wall, who died suddenly while covering the 2022 FIFA World Cup. Grant was on staff at Sports Illustrated for 25 years and covered 13 soccer men's and women's World Cups, 7 Olympics, and 10 Final Fours. As one of the world's leading soccer journalists, he hosted a podcast on the sport and was the author of Masters of Modern Soccer and the New York Times bestseller, The Beckham Experiment. Posthumously, some of his best writing has been collected in the new book, World Class, Purpose, Passion, and the Pursuit of Greatness, with a foreword by his widow, Celine Gounder. Celine joins us now to share 5 key insights from the book.
I'm Dr. Celine Gounder. My late husband, Grant Wall, and I started dating in college the fall of 1995 and were together until his death from an aortic aneurysm in December 2022. He was half the world away, covering the Men's World Cup in Qatar. Grant was the leading journalistic voice on soccer in the United States at the time. I've written the foreword to World Class, a new collection of Grant's best work, and I'd like to share 5 ways Grant practiced his craft, always keeping old-school journalistic standards in mind, even as he reinvented himself as the media landscape changed around him. First, as a reporter, Grant was fearless but fair. As a student at Princeton, his was the lone voice to criticize Pete Carril when the longtime much-revered basketball coach retired. But he did so by talking to a range of current and former players and weighing his critique carefully. Here's how Grant ended his column for the Daily Princetonian. The process has been called Darwinism by some, as if losing one smart, talented player after another were a natural event or the fault of the players. It was neither. Attrition and Darwinism are charitable euphemisms for a coach whose erratic, boundless temper caused him to give up on capable performers. Carril's doghouse, it seems, had a one-way entrance. The current case study of the Carril effect, a virus which tears down formerly confident athletes until they are nothing but a frazzled mess of nerves, is Brian Earle, class of 99, another former starter who said he had never encountered Carril's level of maliciousness before last season. Earle, who is considering a transfer to another school, might still return to Princeton next year. But if he does, it will be primarily because Carril has retired. Ultimately, due to the culture of fear he created for Earle and others, it was Carril himself who most explicitly addressed his excessive tirades. "I'm a little too rough, too severe for the kind of kid who comes to Princeton today," he said upon announcing his retirement. "These kids are getting me at a time when I have less understanding." That kind of self-recognition, however understated it may be, is worth applauding, as are Carril's longevity, determination, and prodigious understanding of basketball. Moreover, we will never forget the euphoria of watching the old coach's final trip to the NCAA tournament. But those successes don't erase the unceasing, often inhuman torments Carril hurled at his players, which is why, despite his positive attributes, when Pete Carril is awarded an honorary membership in the class of 96, I may stand with the crowd, but I will not clap. Second, Grant had a passion for shining light on wrongs that needed righting. During trips to Qatar before the World Cup, he found and interviewed migrant workers who had been exploited by the regime as it raced to build infrastructure for the tournament. Grant's college mentor was the legendary New York Times Vietnam correspondent Gloria Emerson, whom Grant profiled in a creative writing class for the New Yorker editor David Remnick. Before getting on the plane to Qatar, Grant pulled out that story and, as he often did, reread it for guidance and inspiration. Here's its opening paragraph. Gloria Emerson does not keep her Purple Heart framed in the den or pinned to a uniform or encased in some quartzite paperweight. Instead, she maintains it as she received it, in the ribbon form attached to a rectangle of yellowing tagboard. A veteran from Saratoga Springs, New York, sent it to Emerson after he read Winners and Losers, her rage-filled chronicle memoir based on 3 years of interviewing American families and 2 as a Vietnam correspondent for the New York Times. "He thought I had been wounded also," she says. Third, Grant was a master of capturing the championship moment, or as it's known in world football, the trophy lift. Here he is, filing to Sports Illustrated from his first World Cup, after the French national team won in Paris on a July night in 1998. I was with him in Paris that summer. As I waited anxiously for Grant to walk across the city, back from the stadium, the streets impassable, full of celebrating Parisians, Grant wrote this deadline piece in his head. It reads like the first rough draft of history. It's hard to believe that Grant was 22 at the time. In Saint-Denis, the Paris suburb where the French once buried their kings, a new one ascended last week. Zinedine Zidane certainly doesn't look the part. He's quiet, usually gazing down at the ground. He's going prematurely bald. He can appear slow and sometimes clumsy. At one point on his way through the interview at the Stade de France after the World Cup final on Sunday, he stumbled on the carpet like a young girl wearing her first high heels. Give Zidane a ball and put him on a soccer field, though, and he becomes the Baryshnikov of the midfield, deftly toe-poking a pass in one direction, gamely looking at a long ball in the other, holding his head regally erect all the while. It should be noted that Zizou, as he is known, never trips on grass. Fourth, Grant could take the reader by the hand and deliver what journalists call the explainer. It might be about John Calipari's player-empowering new offense, or the secrets of playing the number nine position, according to one of the world's best strikers, or how far soccer clubs all over the world go to squeeze an advantage out of a set piece. Amid the why and the how, Grant always seemed to have a nose for the who, finding and showcasing the innovator or the architect, no matter how obscure, like a junior college basketball coach named Vance Wahlberg. After the appetizers and the porterhouses had been cleared from the table, Calipari asked Wahlberg something that no other coach had bothered to ask him. "So tell me, Vance," he said, "what do you run?" Wahlberg laughed. "You don't want to know," he replied. "It's a little bit off the wall." "No, really," Calipari said. "Show me." And so, using a pepper shaker as the basket, white sugar packets as the offensive players, and pink sweet and low packets as defenders, Wahlberg explained his quirky creation, a high-scoring scheme featuring four perimeter players and a host of innovations. Unlike Knight's classic motion offense, which is based on screens, or Pete Carril's Princeton-style offense, which is based on cuts, Wahlberg's attack was founded on dribble penetration. To Calipari, at least, it embodied two wholly unconventional notions. One, there were no screens, the better to create spacing for drives. Two, the postman ran to the weak side of the lane, instead of the ball side, leaving the ball handler an open driving path to the basket. But there was plenty more. As Wahlberg pushed the packets through the phases of his offense, Calipari experienced a new kind of sugar rush. Wahlberg's scheme was madness. It was genius. Finally, Grant took to heart the edict of nonfiction master John McPhee that your lead should shine like a light through the story. He shows how in two profiles of very different sports prodigies. In a cover story about the teenage LeBron James, Grant describes a scene that places the teenage James in the same frame as Michael Jordan, signaling by association the future Grant sees for his subject. In a follow-up story about Freddie Adu, the soccer phenom whom Grant wrote about as a 14-year-old, but who never fulfilled his promise, Grant finds him in Greece, living on the edge of the game in the company of stray dogs. Here's the lead to a profile of Didier Drogba. Grant evokes Drogba's native Ivory Coast and conveys how a multimillionaire star of the Premier League is drawn powerfully back home. Didier Drogba can close his eyes and recall the smell of the earth during the rainy season in Ivory Coast, the peaty tang that filled the air during warm afternoon cloudbursts. The childhood memory, a touchstone of his Ivorian identity, is part of what draws Drogba back to Africa, to Abidjan, the city of his birth, where he has acquired the land to build a hospital, to South Africa, home of this summer's World Cup, where his 300-foot-high likeness graces Johannesburg's tallest building, and even to this remote place, a dusty compound in Cabinda, Angola, where he is guarded by more assault weapons than a Mexican drug lord. You'll find each of these examples and much more in World Class. I hope you enjoy this tribute to Grant's life and work.
Thank you, Celine. That was Five Big Ideas from World Class, Purpose, Passion, and the Pursuit of Greatness by Grant Wall. You might also like our book bite for The Right Call, What Sports Teach Us About Work and Life by Sally Jenkins. I'm Michael Kobnat. Have a great day.